Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, and boy, do we have the matchup going on currently in the NBA playoffs with the Boston Celtics, currently leading by about 4 points, and looks like Kyrie is about to head to the line, so that will... or should be narrowed down to 2 points here. With currently it is a 56 lead. We have obviously we're going to cover more of the NBA playoffs tonight. We will cover the Stanley Cup playoffs, or at least take a preview of what teams we should be expecting to see in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We will also look at Major League Baseball and maybe give some of our picks of just, obviously it's early season, but maybe give some picks as to who we could potentially see in the World Series picture this year. We will also talk about Tyson Fury and his big win earlier today, and maybe a potential mega matchup that will be coming on in the sport of boxing coming up, and much more. So, obviously, I have Lou joining me as always. As far as I know, I believe we will probably have Chris joining us at some point tonight, and who knows, maybe JB will call in at some point as well. But Lou, yeah. I want to get your thoughts first off on this Brooklyn-Boston matchup, because we said last week how this isn't your ordinary number seven seed, that Brooklyn, you know, Brooklyn has the firepower to where if you were to look at this any other way, you would probably think that this that the roles would be reversed, that Boston would be a potential seven seed and Brooklyn would be, I mean, hell, they were what, the number one seed, number two seed last year, I believe, in the East?
Number two seed, yes.
And now all of a sudden we...
But of course they were saying, you know, Harden's foot was on the line, so that's what cost them that, and that's how they lost that series.
Yeah. And... well, now all of a sudden we've seen some sort of role reversal, basically, with Boston now all of a sudden, you know, entering this as the number two seed. And I said this from the very beginning, there is one team I would not want to face coming from the play-in tournament, and that was Brooklyn. But so far, We've seen a Jason Tatum game winner, right at the buzzer with a game winning layup because Kevin Durant overplayed his defensive where he was set up on defense, which allowed Tatum to completely blow right by Kyrie Irving for the game winner. And in game two, we saw Boston win by a little bit of a bigger margin, by about 7 points, in a uncharacteristically low shooting performance by Kyrie Irving. And also technically you could say as well by Kevin Durant. I mean, I don't know what this Boston defense is doing, but somehow they have been able to significantly limit Kevin Durant compared to previous matchup. Yeah. And some people have said that they've been doing this at a historic rate, you know, to where they led the league in defensive rating this year with, I think it was like 106.2 or something. Compared to now, of, Now, obviously, I'm not saying this Celtics team is a championship team. I'm not saying that at all. But comparing it to the 2007-2008 Boston Celtics team that won the NBA title, they have actually a higher defensive rating than that Boston team had. Then again, though, it's obviously it's a much different era of basketball compared to compared to back then. But let me get your thoughts, Lou, on the 2-0 start so far for the Boston Celtics in this series.
They got away with it. The Nets had a chance in Game 1, but their defense, you know, in the final seconds, you know, they just couldn't block the defender on the Celtics, and that's how they lost. That's how they got that buzzer beater at the end. Game 2, they just ran out of gas. I mean, they were up 17 in the first quarter, looked like a sure win, but Boston just found a way to bounce back. And, of course, the Nets have been getting all kinds of foul trouble and whatnot, and it's cost them. You know, Boston, I think, just has too many weapons right now. They're trying to hang in there. You know, they're only down by 6 now, but they really have to step up here. And maybe now there's a rumor going around that Simmons might be able to play in Game 4. I don't know if that's going to make some kind of impact of it, but, you know, I think the Nets could really use him right about now because, you know, this is, you know, if they don't win this, it is a do-or-die situation here. So everything is going to hinder on what happens here and in game 4 on Monday.
Yeah, that is the rumor that according to head coach Steve Nash, he has been progressing really well in his rehab, and the problem is that he hasn't really been able to work with any of the players that he would technically be out there on on the court at the same time with. So, you know, it makes you wonder. Exactly what you said, you know, what kind of impact, if any, would he really have coming into this series, depending on whether it's a 2-1 Boston lead or if it's a 3-0 Boston lead. Because, you know, it's one thing to have the amount of talent that Simmons has, but you also have to have that camaraderie with your teammates. You have to know where your teammates are going to be. And the fact that he hasn't really been – I mean, he's been practicing. You know, he's been doing, I believe, 3-on-3s. But
yes,
he hasn't really –
I think 4-on-4 as well.
4-on-4, yeah. But he hasn't really been practicing with people. Oh, and Kyrie just picked up his fourth. He hasn't really been practicing, you know, with the people, with the teammates that he would be out there on the court at the same time with. So, you know, it just makes you wonder how much of an impact would he really have? Because, and you know, the fact being too that you also take his previous playoff appearances into account, and he just seems to kind of disappear once the playoffs happen. Plus, you also have to take into account as well that he hasn't even played a single game of basketball since the playoffs last year. So you kind of have to figure rust is going to play a factor as well. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Boston ends up somehow going up 3-0 on Brooklyn. I would not be surprised at all if they potentially shut Simmons down, because I mean, let's face it. There's so many variables that are going through in this situation right now, that you know you just have to wonder, like you said previously, what kind of impact would Simmons really have? Like, would and how many minutes would he even play?
Very limited, but I would say no more than 10.
I mean, right. Then again, right now we have Robert Williams, you know, coming back from his knee surgery for his partially torn meniscus, and let me just take a quick look at the minutes count. He's played very limited minutes, only 6.5 or only around 7 minutes tonight. So, which is odd because they said that he was on track to play around 20, 24 minutes. So it looks like Boston is being extra cautious with Robert Williams moving forward here. And, you know, you kind of have to wonder the same thing about Ben Simmons because he needs to get back into playing shape to begin with. So, you know, who knows exactly how long that may take for him. I mean, he has to get a feel actually being out there on the court in active competition for the first time in a long time. And, I mean, is this really the time to do that in the middle of the playoffs?
No.
I mean, I guess if they were down 3-0, you know, it wouldn't hurt because, you know, you can basically only go up from that spot. But, you know, in a if Brooklyn can narrow this down to 2-1, I don't really know if I would want to put Simmons in there. I don't know if I would want to, especially if Brooklyn can get things going, I don't know if I would want to disrupt any sort of momentum that Brooklyn may be building. Of course, you know, that's just me. You know, I'm not an NBA coach. I'm not a, you know, I'm just an NBA fan. So I've never played the game.
I agree.
So I wouldn't know what's best. But
yeah.
Ooh, that was a pretty hard hit Tatum took at the end there.
Sure did.
You know, there's actually been some awards that have come out. Since last week. First off, with the Defensive Player of the Year, Marcus Smart of the Boston Celtics. A lot of people have believed that he should have been defensive. He should have been in the running for Defensive Player of the Year many times so far in his career.
Mm-hmm.
He finally got in the running this year, and he was officially named the Defensive Player of the Year on Monday night. Mikal Bridges of the Phoenix Suns finished in second. And last
top team of the year,
Rudy Gobert, last year's winner, finished third. And Marcus Smart, he becomes the first guard to win Defensive Player of the Year since Gary Payton did it all the way back in 1996.
Talk about a drought.
And I thought this was a pretty cool gesture too. Gary Payton was actually on hand in Boston when they did the presentation of the trophy, not just at the Celtics practice, but also for game one when they officially gave him the award in front of the fans before the start of game one. So he's also the second player to win the award with the Celtics the only other player to do so was Kevin Garnett back in the first season that the Big Three were together in 2007-2008. And, you know, we've seen many times so far this series why Marcus Smart was named the Defensive Player of the Year. Some of the charges that he's been able to draw, some of the steals that he's been able to make, you know, it's Mikal Bridges had a very good season with Phoenix. Rudy Gobert had a good season with Utah. You know, like a, just like the votes that I read off last week when we were going down each list, Smart was ahead by a mile. So,
right.
You know, it's I guess it's no wonder why Marcus Smart ultimately ended up winning it, because you know he's had a lot of people around the league that have been singing his praises ever since. You know, ever since he officially a couple years ago started turning into more of a defensive point guard as opposed to a playmaker. And also this week we had Scottie Barnes of the Toronto Raptors. He was officially named the Rookie of the Year as he edged out Evan Mobley in a very close vote. Ultimately, it ended up being just between Barnes and Mobley. I know there was Cade Cunningham was also in the running for a little bit, but he pretty much got eliminated.
Dropped off.
He was left in the dust, basically, between Barnes and Mobley. But overall, Scottie Barnes ended up taking home the award. He joins Damon Stoudemire and Vince Carter as the Raptors, who have won Rookie of the Year while with the Raptors.
Excuse me.
And also, not only was he named Rookie of the Year, but he was eligible to play in not just Game 3 against the 76ers, but he officially played earlier today. I forgot if he played in Game 3. I don't think he did. He was available to go officially today, where the Toronto Raptors got back into their series. Granted, it's a little bit of life. They were down 3-0. They are showing a little bit of life, getting back in, thanks to their game earlier today, with a 110-102 victory over the Philadelphia 76ers. And you know, there's one big thing to talk about with this series. Now, obviously, they're going back to Philly.
Yes.
So that means that defensive standout Matisse Thybulle will be eligible to play, because since they're in Philly, there's no vaccination rules. And
right.
They have Thybulle coming back. The problem here is it appears that Joel Embiid has a torn ligament in his thumb.
Right.
But he also said that he's going to hold off surgery until after the season ends for them.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the thing, that he is going to hold off on surgery. However, he looked very Joel like, if we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Today he finished 7 of 16 shooting, 21 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. He was a -5. But it just seemed for the most part that, you know, this isn't the same Embiid that we've seen be dominant out there on the court. I mean, he seemed very hesitant, and whenever he would get shots off, he just seemed very off in today's matchup. I don't know if it's because of the defense.
Yes.
If it's because of the defense that Toronto was putting on him, but he just didn't seem like his normal self. And
no.
you kind of have to wonder if maybe that thumb is sort of playing a bit of a role.
Uh-oh.
What are your thoughts on that, Lou? Do you think that obviously he's going to wait until the off season to have anything done on this thumb.
Not a smart move. I think he should get it done sooner. Yeah, because the more you, the more he plays, the more it's going to bother him, and that's not going to help his case. So I think he needs to get it done sooner. I mean, I don't think it's going to help him to delay it anymore. I mean,
no,
it might get worse.
At the same time, though, that'll probably take him out of the playoffs. So,
if he's hurting, you know, I don't know if he, you know, he should be even in playing, you know, because he was hurting today. Who knows how much worse he can get as the games go on. Yeah, I know you shouldn't, you know, he is a star player, but still, I mean, it's not going to help him.
Yeah, it obviously it doesn't help.
No.
It doesn't help having to play through the pain, but at the same time, if you take out Joel Embiid, if Embiid decides to have the surgery now, which will probably take him out, because I'm pretty sure you can't play after having had surgery on your thumb. I believe the last I remember, somebody was out for at least a month, I think, after surgery on their thumb. So, you know, maybe at best, somebody could potentially be back for the Eastern Conference Finals, or maybe even potentially the NBA Finals, I guess.
Yeah, depending on how long he'd be out for, you know.
Yeah. But I don't know, you know, I don't know about that, because you take out Embiid. I mean, Embiid didn't look like himself, but he was still producing numbers. You know, he was still
yes.
putting up numbers today. The problem
but he was hurting, though.
He was hurting, yes. But if you get rid of Embiid, I mean, their second option is Paul Reed, who had 8 points off the bench today. It's not like they have another big like an Andre Drummond or Dwight Howard. They don't have a notable big to replace Embiid. So, you know, Embiid playing through the injury still gives them the best opportunity. And we now have, through three quarters, it is Boston 81, Brooklyn 72. And this is, I remember the question I wanted to ask you, Lou, because I was, that's why I went over to the NBA awards thing, because I was trying to remember what question I wanted to ask you. A lot of people have been saying that Steve Nash is likely coaching for his job for the rest of this series.
Yeah, I was afraid to say that.
And there's talk if they either get swept or if they lose in five, there's talk that Steve Nash could be made as the scapegoat for Brooklyn's struggles. So, you know, one of the big things I'm wondering is how much do you really put the blame on Nash for Brooklyn's problems this season?
Well, I can't really blame it all on Nash. I mean, there's been a ton of injuries. They've been hit by COVID a lot as well. So I don't really think you can put the blame all on Nash. You know, it's been a very difficult season. I mean, they had their moments during the season, but after the injuries, the trade, and COVID, you know, it all adds up together. So is Nash to blame for most of the problems? No, I really don't. I think the Nets just fell on hard luck, and that's why they struggled towards the end of the season and almost didn't feel like they would even make the playoffs. But to blame it, to put it all on Nash, no, I disagree on that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you take a look at where they finished last year. You know, they were among the top of the Eastern Conference in terms of standings. granted, that's because they had the big three. They had, you know, they had James Harden along with Irving and Durant. They ended up losing in the second round in the mm-hmm. conference semifinals to, I believe it was, I want to say, yeah, it was to Milwaukee, the eventual champions. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, they finished at 48-24 last year, which, you know, it's pretty good. Honestly, it's pretty good for a first time coach. You know, mm-hmm. Granted they finished this year in having to do the play-in tournament, but I don't know if you can really put a lot of the blame on Nash this year, because I mean, yeah, you can put the blame on him that he hasn't been able to make certain adjustments, but I mean, to really put the blame on Nash when you have two studs in Durant and Irving and they're underperforming against a team who's been known to smother opposing offenses. You know, I don't really agree that Nash should really be at the obviously when you have a team as good as Brooklyn has, you know, you expect a lot more out of them. But I mean, we've seen teams. I mean, look at the Lakers, for example. On paper, you know, their
yeah.
team looks like a playoff contending team. You know, they look like a team that should have been contending for the for an NBA title this year on paper.
Yeah, look what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what's worse, how the Nets did
this season or the miniseries they're showing. Okay. Enough on that, though.
But I mean, just take a look at some of the names on this Brooklyn Nets team. Obviously,
yeah.
you got Kevin Durant, you got Kyrie Irving, you have Seth Curry, who's been obviously not as good as his brother Steph, but he's still been very serviceable as a regular every game starter. You have Andre Drummond, who I don't know what happened with him and why he's fallen off, but he used to be so good for the Detroit
yeah.
Pistons. He used to be their stud player out there in Detroit, and something ended up happening after he left Detroit that, for some reason, he just hasn't been the same player. I don't know why. You have Goran Dragic who was a threat with Miami. He still is mm-hmm. technically a pretty big threat off of the bench. I mean, I remember listening to Charles Barkley when. Now, granted, that's not really a big analyst to take seriously with some of the comments that he makes. But the one thing that he mentioned was that Brooklyn could seriously look like a legitimate threat all around with the addition of Goran Dragic that they made
yeah.
towards the deadline. You have Patty Mills, who for so many years was a stud with San Antonio. You have Blake Griffin, who was a stud for L.A. for the
right.
for the Clippers for so many years. You have LaMarcus Aldridge, the same thing with the Spurs, or not the Spurs, the Trailblazers. You know, you have so many big names on this roster that it just. I don't know how you can have so many names and yet put the blame on the coach.
You can't.
Although I will,
the coach is always at fault.
Yeah, but that, you know, that's always the easy fall guy to use, is to use as a fall guy.
Right, of course.
But this is actually, and this is, you know, no fault of Brooklyn's, but this is the first time that they've actually had Blake Griffin out there on the court this series. And he's been dealing with, I think it was like an ankle issue or something. But Griffin is actually seeing playing time for the first time this series. And, you know, he's one of those players that I originally liked the acquisition when Brooklyn acquired him a year or two ago. And, you know, he seemed to really fit in very well, but now it seems like he's basically been reduced to nothing more than a bench player. And maybe potentially barely seeing any playing time. I mean, he's down to averaging like I think he averaged about 6 points a game this year. Which, yeah,
right.
6.4 points per game, which is obviously a career low for him. I almost have to wonder if maybe perhaps the problem with Brooklyn is age. I mean, Patty Mills, you know, he's approaching 34. LaMarcus Aldridge is approaching 37. You have Dragic approaching 36. Kyrie is in his prime. He's 30. He's in his prime. Bruce Brown's approaching 26. He's going to be a free agent this year.
Having a good game tonight too.
He's been money pretty much the last two games, including tonight
especially for
Brooklyn, which is really weird. It's really weird when you look at this roster, and Bruce Brown is your best player these last two games.
Huh.
I mean, that seems kind of odd, don't you think? That Bruce Brown, and actually, let me look tonight. He's their number one scorer once again so far. 23 points. Ooh, what a step back three. Or was that a two?
Only a two.
No, that counts as a two. Okay.
A two.
That's weird. It looked like Curry was behind the three.
That's how he lost the series last year.
But, yeah, you know, Brown tonight, 23 points so far, 6 rebounds. Oh, my Lord, what a three.
That was a three.
Jaylen Brown. 86-78 with about 8.5 minutes left to go in this matchup here. Oh, wide open. Blake Griffin can still shoot those threes. Still shoot them.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, taking a look at – I mean, look at Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant both have 14 points tonight. Now, it's been a better game for Irving. Irving somehow only went for 10 points last game. But, yet you have Durant, who is 6 for 11 tonight so far.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Blake. It looks like they've moved on to Blake Griffin now to be their go-to guy here.
It's been quite a game.
Oh yeah. He's.
Mets on the ropes. They keep battling back.
Yep, but there is an answer right back by Jason Tatum.
You sure haven't heard a guy.
Some of these shots that Tatum can put off, or that Tatum can put up. It seems like they almost come out of nowhere with some of these opportunities.
You're the ball, you jackass.
I mean, it is. You know, a lot of people believe that that Jason Tatum is on his way to becoming one of those two-way superstars who can do it not just offensively but also defensively. A nice push off by Jaylen Brown there. There are people that are beginning to believe that we're starting to see Jason Tatum take that next step in terms of competitively. I mean, obviously he still has to make an NBA final before people consider him among the top, like with LeBron James, with all the other big winners. But it's for people who were saying that entering the season, were saying that Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown may need to be moved because the two can't play with each other. The two do not know how to play together. They've clearly been proven wrong up to this point. And it's just like how Jaylen Brown said at one point during the season that the energy is beginning to shift, and
yes.
That was before he said that before they went on that huge run where they won like hell, I forget how many it was, like 20 out of 24 or something. I forget the exact amount, but it was after January when they went on that huge tear. But one person to keep an eye on here for the Boston Celtics is Peyton Pritchard off of the bench. 10 points.
Oh yeah.
10 points. 10 points off of the bench on 4 of 5 shooting. Maybe the last good draft pick that Danny Ainge made before he officially left town was Peyton Pritchard. A lot of people were looking at Aaron Nesmith as potentially being the pick of that draft by Danny Ainge, or the pick of the Boston Celtics, I should say, not the steal of the entire draft, but between Aaron Nesmith and Peyton Pritchard, who were the two first-round picks that Boston had that year, people were looking at Nesmith as being the one to remember from that draft of the Celtics. But now it looks like it's Peyton Pritchard that everybody is remembering, with Nesmith basically being an afterthought. And looking at Robert Williams' time now, 15 and a half minutes he has played. So either he's going to close out the remainder of this game, or they may put him back on the bench pretty soon here. Let me take a look at the foul trouble. No. Well, wait a minute. Hang on. Where's this Tice? No, that's Williams. Tice and Horford aren't really in foul trouble, so yeah, maybe they might put Robert Williams back on the bench, depending on. But
yeah.
from how he looked tonight, they said depending on how he looks tonight, Robert Williams may see. Oh, what a steal by Grant! And Tatum gets the two and one. Was that a foul called?
That was a foul.
And it looks like that is on Durant, I think. No, that's not an and one. Oh, wait, it is. Okay, so that will be number three for Durant. Three fouls. Wow, Brooklyn has got problems right now in terms of personal fouls.
Yep.
Kyrie is one away from fouling out. Curry has four. Brown has 4, Durant has 3, Drummond has 3, and the bench is relatively clean for the most part, it looks like. But, I mean, Lou, how shocked are you right now at what we're seeing here? Because
sickening,
and that's going to be a turnover. Yep, a backcourt violation. You know, this Brooklyn Nets team has received so much coverage by the mainstream media, by the mainstream sports. Well, yeah, but you know, it's the fact that you have two players like Kyrie and Kevin Durant, and yet they're not producing like they should be.
All right.
Because you know they made such a big deal after Brooklyn lost Game 1. They made such a big deal of, oh, Kevin Durant, he always comes back big. He always comes back big when following a loss. To where, you know, he'll put up a monster game. He'll put up like 39 points or something like that. And so far, we haven't seen that happen.
Yeah.
And that is Durant's 5th, I think. Wait a minute. Hang on. No, hang on. I have no idea what they're doing, what they're arguing here. Or is that Tatum's 5th? No, that's Tatum's 4th. Okay, so that's a foul on Tatum. Looks like it will be, unless they're challenging it, otherwise it looks like it will be 3 for, yeah, it looks like it'll be 3 shots for Durant. From the free throw line.
3 shots. Huh?
I mean, just to show you how big this Boston Celtics defense was in Game 2, Brooklyn was held to 1 basket the entire second half. All of the other points that they scored. Or was it the second half or was it the fourth quarter? Maybe it was just the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
it was just the fourth quarter. They were held to 1 basket in the fourth quarter. All of the other points that they got in the fourth were from free throws. In Game 2. I mean, that right there, I don't think we have seen that in a playoff game. We've seen that maybe during the regular season, depending on what teams are playing, but I don't think we've ever seen that from a playoff game.
No.
And not only once we're done with this, we will also have Game 4 between Memphis and Minnesota, with Memphis currently holding a 2-1 series lead there. Memphis, they actually came back from being down, I think it was 25 points to Minnesota. 27 points being down against Minnesota in Game 3. They end up coming back and winning that game 104-95. Now, the one thing about Minnesota – and Jim has actually said this multiple times, when it comes to Karl Anthony Towns, is that Karl Anthony Towns has been recently getting the benefit of being able to get to the line by extending the elbow.
Yeah.
Like certain stars do, in order to impose their will, if you would. But, you know, I think the big question this playoff, though, has been, is Karl Anthony Towns the franchise player or is Anthony Edwards the franchise player?
Wait,
I mean, Anthony Edwards has been the better scorer of the two. He's been the better overall player.
Yes.
Between the two, this during this playoff run so far, or this playoff series so far.
I have to go with Edwards.
I mean, what do you what do you think? I know you're going with Edwards in that situation, but what do you think of the Memphis series so far, where it looked like Memphis had everything going against them? They had the refs going against them. Minnesota was on home court in Game 3. They were down 27. And then all of a sudden, Memphis just comes from behind.
I was right back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That was only two. I thought he was behind the 3-point line when he was fouled. Okay. I mean, what is this? Does this speak more towards Memphis's depth, or does this speak more towards the lack of discipline by Minnesota?
I would just say lack of discipline, you know, and, you know, overconfident as well. You know, you're up so high and everything, you think, well, we've got this game made, you know, we can just ease up a bit. No, you can't. Even though you're 27, which seems, you know, impossible, but, you know, they just came right back and got it. You can't relax even with a big lead unless you got like 2 minutes in the fourth quarter. But, you know,
true.
You let your guard down and everybody will take advantage of it.
True. You can't relax regardless of what your lead is. And you know, I think this was actually a low for Minnesota for Karl Anthony Towns. He had only 8 points last game. I think ever since he started as a pro, I think that may have been in a game where he wasn't injured at all, that may be a low for him. A huge 3-pointer there by Al Horford. I think that's actually his first. I think that's his first points of the night there. Yeah, you know, those 8 points by Karl Anthony Towns, I think, is actually a career low for him in a game where he's fully healthy. And literally all he was doing towards the end of the game was starting to bitch about the refereeing.
Yeah.
So we go to break here, 3:51 to go, 101-88 Celtics lead. And Brooklyn is if they're not in desperation mode, they got to be in desperation mode now, because they are about 3 minutes away from going down 3-0.
Yeah.
But, you know, take a look at this Memphis team, though. I mean, let me just give you some stats from last game. Ja Morant, 16 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. He had a triple-double. Desmond Bane, 26 points. And this is a guy, keep in mind, the Boston Celtics originally drafted and then traded to Memphis for, I think it was like a second-round pick. That they traded him for in order to trade into the second round that year. Desmond Bane, 26 points with 6 rebounds. As a starting shooting guard, you had Dylan Brooks with 11 points as a starting I don't want to say small forward, because I don't know if he's the smaller power forward. I believe Kyle Anderson is the power forward. Off of the bench, you had Tyus Jones with 11 points. You had Brandon Clark with 20 points off of the bench, leading that comeback by Memphis. I mean, to me, it honestly looks like that. You know, it honestly looks like that they're going to be. It's probably more because of Memphis's depth as opposed to any discipline by Minnesota.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, man. Another basket, this time by Marcus Smart. Yeah, 15-point lead. It is not looking good for Brooklyn. Let's see. But what do you think about the second half of this heavyweight matchup, of this two-part heavyweight matchup? The first part, obviously, is Brooklyn and Boston right now.
Yeah.
But what do you think about Memphis and Minnesota? Do you think Minnesota ties it up tonight, or do you think Memphis pushes them to the brink?
I think Memphis can push them to the brink. I really think they can take the Wolves and I don't think it's gonna be a blowout, but I do think that, you know, they do have more weapons than Minnesota and will take it.
And game five, keep in mind, is in Memphis, so they would have the chance to close it out. They would have the chance to close it out at the FedEx Forum, if that's the case. And I believe they would match up against Golden State. I want to say.
I think that's when they're going to hit the wall.
I mean, possibly. You take a look at that Golden State roster. Of the series in the first round, Golden State easily has the best opportunity to sweep their series. All right, we did have our first matchup of the day today, though, was Utah tying up the series with Dallas with a 100-99 squeaker. And it's weird because Dallas had the ball with 11 seconds left. And coming out of a timeout, Jason Kidd had the chance, he had the opportunity to draw up a play. He decides to draw it up to where they give it to Luka Doncic. He gets double teamed for five or six seconds, and ultimately they end up settling for a long distance three. And I'm talking, when I say long distance, I'm talking like longer than normal.
Right.
A longer than normal three. Oh, nice rebound by Al Horford. You know, a longer than normal three ball, and it's not something that I would have expected out of a team that you had at least 6 seconds left to try and get something, to try and get some sort of shot off, and that's the best you can come up with, is to settle for a long distance three. And keep in mind, he barely hit the rim as it was, and that ultimately is what gave Utah the tie, headed back to Dallas for Game 5. So, I mean, what are your thoughts first off on Luka Doncic returning to action officially today, coming off of the ankle sprain, it kind of seemed like they played better without Doncic.
It seemed that way too, because, you know, personally, I didn't think they were really going to do without him. I thought maybe, you know, they would struggle without Doncic in line, but looks like it's the other way around.
Doncic, though, did show up, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists. He was the lead scorer. Jalen Brunson, 23 points as well. 23 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Dwight Powell, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Reggie Bullock, who, by the way, Reggie Bullock is a contender for the worst haircut ever imagined, all had 11 points.
I can imagine that, yes.
I mean, literally, Jim said this as we were talking earlier today while watching the game. It was basically reminiscent of a bird trying to take flight.
A bird.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally what it looks like. That's literally what it looked like, was a bird trying to take flight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, a candidate for the worst hairdo of the year. You know, I want to move away from the NBA for a second here. Obviously, a 5-point lead. Jason Tatum heading to the line, though, with about 17.2 seconds left. And it looks like this will probably, 6-point lead, maybe potentially 7-point lead coming out of this second free throw. I want to talk about what happened at Yankee Stadium earlier today. And I'm sure you're probably well aware of...
Yes, I am.
The New York Yankees, they had just gotten a walk-off victory over the Cleveland Guardians. Actually, you know what? I'll go before that. Before that actually took place, one of the Cleveland Guardian outfielders, I forget his name. His last name was Kwan, I think. And that is a steal, and it looks like that is the game. 109-100 for Boston. Or no, 109-103, I should say. But basically, there was an outfielder who tried to make a play on the game tying play. And ultimately, he ended up not making the play. But apparently, something happened where he got injured on the attempt, and New York Yankee fans started heckling him. That forced his teammate to literally scale the left field. He ended up scaling one of the walls, and having words with those specific fans. Then, when the game winning hit took place,
right center field.
In what was supposed to be a moment of celebration, ended up becoming a moment centered around a bunch of ass clowns out in right center field deciding to throw trash at the Cleveland outfielders, to the point of where they had Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and a whole bunch of Yankees to run out to the outfield saying, "What the hell are you guys doing?" And, you know, urging the fans to stop throwing the trash. Now, obviously, this doesn't speak for, you know, this isn't reminiscent of or representative of all Yankee fans. But,
yeah,
one would have to think if these fans haven't been already, they should be banned for life, stadium.
Yes.
My understanding is, according to some of the post game comments that were made by some of the Cleveland Guardian outfielders involved in this whole ordeal, a couple of them were actually hit by some of the beer bottles and other respected pieces of trash that were thrown out onto the. That were thrown out onto the field and ended up leaving a couple of marks on some of these players.
Yeah.
Now it's one thing if something happens like what happened when one of the Cleveland players ended up scaling the fence like they did. You know, you can't, as a fan, you can't prevent that from happening. Well, I mean, you can prevent that from happening.
You can.
You can not open your mouth, period, in that scenario. But in the second part, you know, as you can prevent not having trash thrown out onto the field.
No.
You're a fan. You just don't do that. Being able to go to a sporting event is supposed to be a form of entertainment.
It was.
You know, it was supposed to be a form of entertainment. These players, you know, they're not supposed to be having trash thrown at them.
No.
I mean, Lou, what did you think about the?
I didn't see it live, but I heard about it. I was like, what the hell? I mean, yeah, you won, and you know, I mean, since fans do lose control a little bit, but there is no excuse for that. There is no excuse for that kind of behavior, whether you win or lose. That is not how a fan should act. And that was, you know, unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah, and you know, it's one thing to, I mean, I would expect that. I would expect that from fans, you know, from a loss. Well, I shouldn't say I would expect it, but you know, I would, you know, I would anticipate it. I should say, not expect it. I would anticipate that they would do something like that for like a heartbreaking loss or something, or maybe you're a fan of a team that absolutely sucks. I wouldn't expect that from a fan base of a team that literally just walked off a game, that won a game via a walk-off. That's not something I would expect at all from a fan base like New York. Yep. So I was absolutely stunned when that happened. I mean, I immediately jotted it down as soon as it happened. I'm like, I got to talk to Lou about this tonight because
thanks.
I just didn't think that we would ever, you know, we would ever see something like that. I mean, I thought there was the possibility we could have another Malice at the Palace situation. All it would have taken was one of those fans, the Cleveland outfielder that was getting in their face. All it would have taken was one of those fans to throw a punch.
Yeah.
That's all it would have taken.
So goes my idiot story of the week next week.
We did have a little bit of interesting news tonight. This game is now officially final. Tampa Bay ended up winning 3-2 in 10 innings. However, it was 0-0 heading into the 10th inning on a combined no-hitter. No joke. Heading into the 10th inning, there were only two total hits the entire game. And that both of those hits came from Tampa Bay. Boston was getting no hit into the 10th inning, and had it gone into an 11th inning with a no-hitter still, it would have been the first time since 1901 that a team had been no-hit past 10 innings in a single game. And actually, this was, I believe, had it gone through 10 innings, it would have been the first time, period, that a team with a designated hitter would have been no hit through 10 innings. I just thought it was amazing. And it took the unlikeliest of all players, Bobby Dalbec, who has probably been hitting the worst out of all the Red Sox offense, and yet he hit a triple to score the ghost runner. Yeah, he ended up hitting a triple to start off the 10th inning that brought in the ghost runner from home from second.
Right.
Then ultimately he ended up scoring on a sacrifice fly himself. So, but Boston or Tampa Bay ended up walking off Boston in the bottom of the inning with a two-run homer after they had scored the ghost runner previously. So a 3-2 final for the Tampa Bay Rays. And you know, looking at baseball as a whole here, honestly, you know, I'm looking at some of these divisions, and there's like the AL East, for example. I don't think I can really give a determination at all as to who's going to be on track to win the AL East, because the AL East is completely all over the place.
Yeah.
But right now,
yeah, except
Toronto
for Baltimore.
Is in the lead. Except for Baltimore, yeah. Baltimore is pretty much, you pretty much know where Baltimore is going to finish.
Their season ended the day of the spring training ended.
Pretty much. But, you know, I'm looking at the AL East. You got Toronto in the lead currently, one game ahead of New York. Two games ahead of Tampa and three ahead of Boston. You know, obviously, I would probably assume that you're going to be seeing Toronto and New York jostling for AL East supremacy this year, assuming that Toronto can continue.
What about the Red Sox?
Honestly, we do not have the starting pitching for it. I mean, Chris Sale isn't even pitching. James Paxton is out until the All-Star game. And, I mean, this is how bad it is right now. We literally had Garrett Whitlock as our starter today, who, by the way, he threw 4 one-hit innings with 7 strikeouts on 48 pitches. They're trying to... It sounds like they're trying to stretch him out to be an everyday, starter, to be a regular starter.
Yes.
But, you know, everybody thought entering this season that the bullpen would be the problem. It's the starting pitching that's the problem. I mean, Michael Wacha has been a bright spot. Michael Wacha has been a bright spot. Nate Eovaldi has been a bright spot. But, you know, the rest of the rotation it's lackluster. I mean, Rich Hill literally looks like his arm is about to fall off. Tanner Houck has been 50-50. And we don't even have a bona fide fifth starter. So, yeah. And plus, our offense has decided not to show up this season, apparently. So
okay, now you got a problem.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically the state of the Boston Red Sox right now. I wouldn't rule out Tampa Bay maybe potentially making things interesting. Honestly, the way Boston is looking right now, I wouldn't be shocked if we end up trading Xander Bogaerts at the deadline, because it's obvious that we're probably not going to come to an agreement with him, because we are far behind or we are far apart in terms of dollar amounts in negotiation talks. So. I don't know. You know, I really do not know about this Red Sox team.
Yeah,
the AL Central, Cleveland, believe it or not, is actually a lot better than I thought they were. Minnesota is kind of hanging in there. Honestly, for the most part, the AL Central sucks. You know, Chicago, everybody was looking at the White Sox on paper as being the best team in the AL Central, and they've lost their last 6 games. They're 6-8 now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, they're tied with Detroit now at 6-8, which, by the way, congratulations to Miguel Cabrera on his 3,000th hit of his career today. That officially puts him as the seventh player to have had at least 3,000 hits and 500 home runs in his career. And obviously you have Kansas City at the bottom of the division at 5-7. So
yeah, where's the team from 2015 when you need them?
Yeah, I mean, AL Central, you're probably looking at Cleveland and Minnesota, maybe an outside chance of Chicago if they can get their shit together. But
yeah, right.
Other than that, you know, I don't really see them doing the AL Central really doing much.
A whole lot of shit.
The AL West, you have the LA Angels out in front, followed by the Seattle Mariners at 8-6. Both teams at 8-6. Oakland is at 500 at 8-8, and Houston is surprisingly at 6-8 to start the year, and Texas at 5-9. Believe it or not, even though Texas is 5-9, they're only three games back. So, I mean, obviously, you know, with all of these divisions, it's still very early, but sometimes you can tell when team, depending on teams, when they get off to good starts. The NL East, the New York fans are still celebrating as if the Mets won the World Series already because they're at 11-4. A four-game lead over Atlanta right now and a five-game lead over Philly. So, I mean, the NL East is
right
still
now,
unpredictable.
But that doesn't mean it's going to stay there.
No, of course not. But the NL, you know, the NL East is so unpredictable. I'm not even going to really even give a prediction right now for the NL East. The NL Central, you've got St. Louis out front at 9-5. Honestly, if I were a betting man, I'd probably put money on St. Louis to win the Central. Maybe an outside chance of Milwaukee, but I think we're probably looking at, if we're looking at potential playoff teams, I think St. Louis is probably one of those teams. Especially
what about the Dodgers with Freeman?
Oh, they're a foregone conclusion.
I thought so.
They're a foregone conclusion. They're going to make the playoffs, whether it's somehow as a wild card team or if they're going to represent the NL West as the division winner. They're definitely going to make the playoffs this year. The NL West, though, could potentially be a dogfight. If early standings are any indication, the Dodgers are 10-3. San Francisco is 10-5. They're only one game back. Mm. Colorado is 9-5. They're a game and a half back. San Diego is 9-6. They're two games back. And Arizona, they've already waved the white flag on their season. They're 5.5 games back. Speaking of waving the white flag, though, Cincinnati at 2-13. How can a team go from borderline contending for the playoffs last year to right back down to the cellar?
You can't. What I like to know is how they managed to get back right down to the cellar.
I have no idea how that is. I just have no idea.
Yeah, neither do I. I mean, it sounds peculiar.
By the way, early on here, this is the same. We're off to the same start as last game. Memphis currently up by 4 over Minnesota, 14-10, about halfway through the first. So, obviously, plenty of time left here, but it looks like we're off to pretty much the same start for the Memphis Grizzlies against Minnesota. as they were last game. Now, the difference is, can Memphis actually avoid going down by 27 this time?
I don't know. I mean, I found it kind of strange that you lost. No, you couldn't even hold a 27-point lead. I mean, what did that tell you?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's another thing too that we didn't talk about. That has to be morale draining. To be up by 27.
What morale?
And then to be up by 27 and then completely blow that lead and ultimately end up losing the game entirely.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be morale draining. If you're on that team, at that point you're almost thinking, what the hell do we have to do to beat these guys if we have a 27-point lead and we can't even beat them?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, going over to. When it comes to the NL West, like I said, you're probably looking at a dogfight in the NL West.
I think out of all of the
divisions, the only team you can really eliminate is Arizona. Other than that, if Colorado can stay at the same pace that they are right now, it is possible that Colorado could be a potential player. Going down the road here, potentially.
Yes.
Oh, and by the way, Coach Udoka just said of Robert Williams that he thought Robert Williams played great, could have honestly played more. So, I think it's safe to say that for Game 4, you're probably looking at extended minutes for Robert Williams. I think like Adrian Wojnarowski said in his, in a tweet before the game, that the anticipation was that Robert Williams would play in Game 3, and if everything went well, expect significant minutes out of him for Game 4. He went 15 and a half minutes tonight. I think it's safe to say, based off of Coach Udoka, off of his comments, we're probably looking at maybe potentially Robert Williams starting Game 4. And the good news is he felt no pain in his first game back following knee surgery. Now, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, Lou, how can somebody come back from knee surgery this quickly?
Yeah, it's a miraculous wonder.
I mean, he only missed 9 games, and he came back in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty miraculous recovery. That's a pretty miraculous recovery when you think about it. And like he just said, he felt no pain today. For today's matchup. So, but yeah, from what it looks like, you know, considering they're down, Brooklyn is now down 3-0. I mean, we brought up the question earlier: would we even see Ben Simmons play? I guess at this point, there's no harm for Brooklyn in playing him, I guess, because
no,
you got to put everything out there on the table. Well, we don't know. But at this point, you know, you got to put everything out there on the table. Unless this is all a ruse and this is just, this is just his way of being able to quiet people when they're asking, you know, is he ever going to step out onto the court this year? That it could, him saying him leaking out that he would be ready for game four, maybe that's a way of sort of quieting some people.
I think I smell a rat too.
So
I think
I, mean, I wouldn't be shocked at all.
I
wouldn't be shocked at all either way. I wouldn't be shocked at all either way. If it's a stunt and he's not really going to play, or if he is really going to play, and this way, if Boston wins, he can't, you know, the blame can't be put on Simmons.
Right.
Because if you remember correctly, last year when Philly got eliminated from the playoffs, all of the blame was put on Ben Simmons for not being able to make the certain plays.
Right.
So, you know, I don't – like I said, I wouldn't be surprised either way if he plays or not. We did have a official retirement this week as Jay Wright, the head coach of Villanova, officially
yes.
announced that he was stepping away from Villanova and effectively retiring from basketball entirely. There were rumors that he would maybe take an NBA job. That apparently is false, as he is officially retiring from the sport as a whole. It was during his time with Villanova, he was a two-time NCAA Division I champion, winning the title in 2015-2016 and 2017-2018. He had a career record of 520 wins and 197 losses with the Villanova Wildcats. So now there's another program that needs filling in the college landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I forgot about.
I mean,
Go ahead.
I mean, you know, he's had a historic career. He gave him two titles and everything. So, you know, I think it's, you know, well deserving of his retirement now. But he's not leaving basketball completely. He's taking another position.
He is?
Yes.
Not coaching.
He's going to be like, you know.
He's not going to be coaching anymore, is he? Because
my understanding
was that he's – okay. So what is it, like front office or something?
Something with a front office, yes.
Or is it like a consultant role?
No, I think it's in the front office.
All right. Well, I mean, that would make sense if he sticks around with Villanova – you know, at least he wouldn't have to have the added pressure of coaching literally every
right.
season. I want to get your thoughts on, because we were talking about injuries earlier. I forgot to bring these two specific ones up, and one of them, actually both of them, are pretty huge. Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns is set to miss both games 3 and 4 against New Orleans, and actually I believe he already missed game 3, so game 4 is tomorrow night at 9:30, where Phoenix looks to make it a 3-1 series lead over New Orleans due to right hamstring tightness after he exited game 2. Now it's considered to be a huge loss, considering the fact that, you know, normally the Suns are money when they have both Devin Booker and Chris Paul on the court at the same time. And granted, they did win game 3. That doesn't mean they're going to win game 4. How big of a loss potentially be for the Suns, especially since if he does return for game 5, you don't know what kind of condition he's going to be in. If he's going to be 100%,
exactly.
or you don't know at what strength he's going to be playing at the entire rest of this series.
Exactly.
So what are your thoughts on that, Lou? What impact do you think this could potentially turn the tide for the Pelicans?
It could, because, you know, like I've said, it only takes one significant injury that can turn a team's fortune or misfortunes around, and the Pelicans, you know, they might be able to take advantage of this.
And not just Phoenix, but also Milwaukee is dealing with an injury. Chris Middleton, one of their starters, is set to be reevaluated in 2 weeks with a sprained left MCL. And Middleton is probably one of their top 3-point shooters. Originally, when he left the game two loss to the Chicago Bulls on Wednesday, it was previously announced that he was dealing with a sore knee. However, now it's revealed it's a sprained left MCL. So with him missing at the very least 2 weeks, it looks like Grayson Allen is probably going to be moving into the starting five for the Milwaukee Bucks. But, I mean, this could potentially extend into the next matchup, which could be presumably against the Boston Celtics.
Which had chosen to be the surprise in the playoffs.
What are your thoughts on that, Lou? You know, obviously, Chicago, you know, they were able to surprise everybody when they took game two against Milwaukee before being blown out in game three.
That was a disgrace.
Could this potentially work in Chicago's favor?
After what happened in last night's game, no. After that blowout loss at home, I don't think so.
I mean, this is another scenario where, okay, if Milwaukee ends up advancing, presumably against Boston, assuming that Boston doesn't throw a three, doesn't blow a 3-0 series lead here. Which, by the way, I believe that would be the first time in NBA history that a team were to ever do that.
Yes.
You know, you kind of have to assume as well that Middleton, if he does play to start the series against next series, whether it's against Boston or if Brooklyn can somehow come back, he's not necessarily going to be at 100%. With a sprain, after dealing with a sprained left MCL, you know, it's this could be, depending on the matchup, a pretty big problem for Milwaukee moving forward. Not just that, but now we also have the Miami Heat dealing with an injury, with Kyle Lowry leaving last night's game against Atlanta with a left leg injury. And it's not known how serious that injury is. But, you know, who knows how long Lowry's going to be out. And if Lowry has to be out for an extended length of time, that means that the Heat are going to have to rely on Jimmy Butler even more to produce. It's like, all of these injuries are now all of a sudden starting to pile up for each of these teams.
Yes.
And, you know, this is exactly the worst time for them to be happening, too, because this is obviously in the middle of the playoff run. I mean, you even had the Raptors, you know, Thaddeus Young. He's been dealing with a hyperextended left thumb. Scotty Barnes literally just came back from a sprained left ankle. which, by the way, I believe he tweaked earlier in today's game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just more and more of these injuries are starting to take place. And actually, from what it says here with Devin Booker, he could actually miss 2 to 3 weeks. It says here with his hamstring strain. From what it looks like, and not just games 3 and 4. So this could be more of a serious blow to Phoenix than originally thought.
Mm-hmm.
So that obviously will be something to keep an eye on moving forward here. A couple of stats from this past week. Duncan Robinson, he set the Miami Heat record for 3 points for three-pointers in a playoff game with 8 three-pointers as he scored 27 points on 9-for-10 shooting and grabbed a rebound in 23 minutes during last Sunday's blowout win over the Atlanta Hawks for game one. Al Horford in game one of the Celtics-Nets series, he became just the 13th player in NBA history to record a 20-point, 15-rebound playoff game at the age of 35 or higher. The other 12 players to do that, well, let's just say they are either Hall of Fame, they are either in the Hall of Fame already or they are Hall of Fame bound. As you have, I mean, just to list off the names, Kareem, Barkley, Baylor, Wilt, Duncan, LeBron, Karl Malone, Dirk, Hakeem, David Robinson, Russell, Dominique. All of these players are either already in the Hall of Fame or they're Hall of Fame bound already.
Yeah.
And Al Horford now becomes the 13th player in NBA history to record a 20-point, 15-rebound playoff game. And this comes at the expense of what Bruce Brown, the comments that Bruce Brown made before this series, where he basically said that Daniel Tice and Al Horford don't bring anything to the table compared to Robert Williams, and that they could easily abuse Al Horford and Daniel Tice going straight to the basket. Which honestly is probably the biggest mistake that you can make right before a playoff game, because the last thing you want to do is give a team any bulletin board material.
Right.
And that's exactly what Bruce Brown did right before the start of this series, which Kevin Durant did his best to try and immediately deflect those comments. I mean, he flat out said, We know what the Boston Celtics can what they bring to the table, and what those two particular players bring to the table. Now, this next bit of news is kind of a head scratcher, Lou, because have you ever seen a head coach get fired after two consecutive years of improvements?
Not to my knowledge, no. And I think that's wrong. You know, he was on the upswing and whatnot with his team, and you fired him anyway.
And I, of course, am talking about James Borrego of the Charlotte Hornets. He started off his Charlotte Hornets career with a 39-43 record a couple years ago. They missed the playoffs. His second year, they went 23-42. They ended up missing the playoffs. Last year, they went 33-39, and they got eliminated in the play-in tournament. This year, 39, arguably his best record as head coach, and they ultimately got eliminated in the play-in tournament in an embarrassing loss, might I add. That was actually worse than last year's loss. But he had two consecutive improvement years, and he was given a three-year extension this past offseason. So he had 2 years remaining on his deal. And now all of a sudden, Charlotte has decided to pull the plug. I mean, I can understand why, considering his overall record. I mean, hang on, let me make sure I have this right. He went 138-163 with Charlotte in 4 years. Now, previously he was the interim coach for the Orlando Magic in 2014-2015, where he went 10-20 during that year when Jacques Vaughn got fired from the Orlando Magic, and ultimately James Borrego ended up coaching the team for the remaining 30 games of the season. But I mean, he had been building a young team in Charlotte, Charlotte has clearly been a rebuilding team for the last couple of years. And it kind of seems like Charlotte management, for some reason, ran out of patience with him.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's why they ended up firing him. I mean, it seemed like Charlotte was starting to turn a corner, so I don't think this was really the right decision, but obviously I'm not an executive, so I'm just a fan. Nobody really takes fans seriously, but
to me,
it wouldn't seem like the right move to have been made.
No, firing him.
I mean, he was over 500 at least. Four games over 500. You know, it's still a work in progress out there in Charlotte. After the post Kemba Walker years. So plus there's talk that Gordon Hayward apparently wants out. So, you know, they're going to basically be rebuilding for quite a while out there in Charlotte. And depending on what they get for Gordon Hayward, you know, who knows depending on what they get for him, maybe that rebuild gets accelerated. But let's go over to the NHL, as we have the Stanley Cup playoffs set to get underway. We have about 3 games left, I think, depending on your schedule. Yeah, 4 or 3 games left. In Boston's case, it's 4 games, but for New York, it's 3. Which, by the way, Boston did beat New York earlier today, 3-1. That's one hell of a season Chris Kreider has had, by the way. 51 goals for the New York Rangers. And, you know, a lot of people were wondering if New York made the right choice by extending him to as big of a contract as they gave him. And ultimately, I mean, he hasn't disappointed so far, and New York is actually looking like a legitimate threat this year coming out of the Eastern Conference. But looking at the matchups or at the teams right now as they are, all of the Eastern Conference is decided. We have Carolina, we have the New York Rangers, and we have the Pittsburgh Penguins as the top three in the Metropolitan Division. We have the Florida Panthers, who have officially clinched the best record in the East. So they will officially be the number one seed out of the East. Toronto with 109 and Tampa Bay with 104. The two wild cards we have right now are the Boston Bruins and the Washington Capitals. Now, obviously, depending on what happens as a result of the remaining games here, there still could be certain matchups that take place depending on the results of these final games. In the Western Conference, we have one playoff spot. Or actually, no, we do. We have three playoff spots still up for grabs. But in the Central Division is all locked up. Colorado, they have the best record in the West, so they will officially be the number one seed with 116 points. Minnesota is in second with 107 points. Third in the Central Division is the St. Louis Blues with 105. In the Pacific, you have the Calgary Flames, who have won the Pacific Division with 106 points. The Edmonton Oilers, they have officially locked themselves into a playoff spot with 98 points. And the Los Angeles Kings are in third with 94. Meanwhile, our two wild cards as they are right now are Nashville and Dallas, which both have 93 points apiece. 4 points ahead of Las Vegas and 6 points ahead of the Vancouver Canucks. Now, obviously, there's still games left to be played, but for the most part, it looks like those are the teams that are still in contention as of now. Now, what are your thoughts, Lou? Just from a standpoint here, looking at these two conferences, I mean, who does it look like? Who do you think would be the favorites to potentially hoist the Stanley Cup? You think we're going to see it from the East, or do you think we'll see it from the West?
I think we'll see it. Well, if the Avalanche have to say anything about it, it'll be the West. But, you know, Florida Panthers, though, have shown, like, you know, they can be contending for the East. So, it's gonna, you know, on paper, that's where the matchup looks like to be. But I think the Avalanche are gonna take it. So I think it's going to come from the West this year. You know, the East,
you know,
though, has been, you know, very competitive.
The big question for the East, too, though, is can Carolina regain their hot streak that they were on at one point, where it seemed like they were virtually unbeatable?
Oh, I hope not.
I mean, they were winning games like 6-2, 6-1. It looked unfair at certain points with Carolina. And, you know, a lot of people were kind of surprised when they traded away Nedeljkovic in the offseason. You know, a lot of people weren't expecting Carolina to have such a good team goaltender-wise. But a lot, you know, they have surprised a lot of people with their goaltending trio of Frederik Andersen, Piotr Kochetkov, and Antti Raanta this season. It's been very surprising. You know, not surprising in terms of offensively. I mean, offensively, they've always had the firepower, but a lot of people felt that they might take a step back because of the fact that, you know, they traded away a goalie who looked like was going to be their future. He looked like he was going to be their future stud, basically, in net. And instead, you know, he's now withering away down in Detroit. So, but Carolina, you know, there's always the possibility if they can get hot again, they could potentially be the team to challenge Florida. You know, I wouldn't rule out, honestly, I wouldn't rule out Boston ever since they acquired
Lindholm. So, yeah.
Yeah, but ever since they acquired Lindholm from the Anaheim Ducks, they've been a lot better whenever he's been out there on the ice as opposed to using any of their other I mean, the problem with this is now, you know, they have defensemen who had been starting all season long, and now there have been certain defensemen that have been having to take a back seat ever since they acquired Lindholm. And then they acquired Josh Brown, and they had to start mix and matching, you know, taking Brown out of the lineup, putting either Mike Riley or Derek Forbort in the lineup. And obviously Lindholm, you know, is being paid like a top two defenseman. So he's not going to miss any time unless it's due to injury. But ever since he's been out there, and if they've had a fully healthy team, Boston has shown recently that they can beat almost anybody. So I wouldn't rule out the Bruins. Toronto, if they end up facing Tampa Bay in the first round, I can tell you right now, Toronto is headed for another first-round exit from what it looks like. Yeah. If they end up having to face Tampa Bay in the first round, they are headed for another first-round exit. I would be surprised if they end up actually making Charles Barkley be right and actually getting through to the next round for the first time in forever. I mean, honestly, from what it looks like right now, it looks like it's going to be Florida versus Boston, Toronto versus Tampa, then you have Carolina against Washington, and you have New York against Pittsburgh for their first round matchups. And
I'll take 20% of that.
I mean, honestly, let me put it this way: I would give Boston a better chance of getting by Florida than I would give them a chance of getting by Carolina. So, you know, there's that to think about, but I would expect that we see Tampa Bay knock off Toronto. You know, I would say New York would knock off Pittsburgh, but we've seen crazier things happen with Pittsburgh in past years. And plus, with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin on that team, I can never rule them out for any reason.
I hate Malkin.
Carolina, I would sort of expect them to take out the Capitals because, I mean, let's be honest, ever since winning the Stanley Cup, Washington hasn't been the same team.
You know, it happens to a lot of teams, though. You know, they're high and mighty, thinking they're unstoppable, after winning the championship a year, and then after that, you know, they just fall apart. It means breaking up the team and whatnot, and, you know, or they just get too cockeyed and thinking that they're never going to lose, and it happens. You know, it's, you know, what I call the championship hangover, because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and sometimes the hangover lasts for years, as opposed
to... And then when you lose it, you know, you... still got the effect that you can't win. You know, you had your chance and you blew it, and you won't win again for years, even decades to come.
Yeah.
Just as the Rangers in 2014.
Now, for the Western Conference, the way things are panning out, in the Central Division, it looks like it's going to be. Let's see how. Wait a minute. Hang on. Let me look this up by division. Okay. So, the way this is looking, depending on if Nashville and Dallas are both representing. Okay, if Nashville and Dallas are both representing the Central Division as the two wild cards, obviously Colorado would get the worst of the two records. I would assume that would probably be Dallas because Nashville does have one game on hand. So Dallas has three games left. Nashville has four. I would assume Dallas would be the worst of the two. So Colorado would get that matchup. And in that case, I would assume that Colorado would probably beat Dallas. Minnesota and St. Louis. I'd say maybe St. Louis. Just based off of how their team is comprised as a whole. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if Minnesota knocks them off because Jordan Binnington isn't anywhere close to the – he isn't anywhere close to the goaltender he was when they won the Cup. So that still leaves that open. For the Pacific, Nashville would face Calgary in the first round. I would expect that Calgary would advance. And – when it comes to Edmonton and likely Los Angeles, I would expect we would probably see Edmonton advance to the second round.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously that all depends on if Los Angeles can hang on or if Vegas somehow sneaks their way in there. That's another
factor
there. I mean, Vegas has four games remaining. Depending on if LA loses each of their last three and Vegas wins out, Vegas would take the number three spot in the Pacific. That would mean also that LA would likely be eliminated unless both Nashville and Dallas lose all of their remaining games, which I don't see happening.
No.
So I would assume that we're probably looking at Los Angeles as the number three seed for the Pacific. Yeah, you know, looking at the two conferences between the East and the West, I would be more frightened about the East than I would about the West, which is really weird considering the fact that the West usually has the tougher teams. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm taking a look at the difference between the playoff teams and the non-playoff teams in the East, and there's a significant gap.
Yeah.
Like a 20 point gap between the Islanders, who are the highest non-playoff team in the East with 80 points, and the lowest playoff team with 99, which is Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like a 19 point gap between the best non-playoff team and the worst playoff team out of the East. Now, as far as the Western Conference goes, I mean, you still have like three different teams in the running. So, I mean, that just kind of shows you how much closer it is between playoff and non-playoff teams compared to what we're seeing. But yeah, you know, I mean, with the NHL playoffs coming up, it should be it should be a pretty interesting battle. I would assume that we're probably looking at the winner of the Stanley Cup coming out of the East. The only contender I can really see out of the West is Colorado, unless St. Louis makes that improbable run again, like they did in 2018.
Was it 2019?
Which I guess, or 2018, 2019, one of those 2 years. I forget which.
I think it was 19. Because Capitals, I think, won in 2018.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think you're right. So
yeah.
Or maybe it's the other way around. I forget.
Okay.
Regardless. You know, St. Louis, unless they go on another improbable run again, you know, I'm not really sure about Minnesota over there. And Calgary, mm-hmm. Calgary, there's always something that ends up going wrong whenever they reach the playoffs, and the same thing goes with Edmonton. So, I mean, if I were a betting man, I would probably put my money on Colorado to represent the West, because it seems
right.
like this year they finally have it all together, especially after losing their number one goaltender to Seattle. You know, they lost their number one goaltender to Seattle, but yet somehow they're on top of the West with 116 points. Over on the East, honestly, I can only see. No, I can't be a homer and say Boston. Honestly, I can only see maybe three teams that could potentially make it this year: Florida, Tampa, and I know a lot of people say Tampa's third seed, though. Yeah. But they have a shit ton of firepower on that in that lineup. That I don't care where they're positioned. Just because they're positioned lower in the rankings, that doesn't mean that they can't outgun anybody at any point in time.
Yeah,
and. Maybe Carolina, if they can get their shit together and get back to playing the hockey that they were playing to begin the, you know, for most of the season. Now, let's go back to the Celtics game for a minute here, because I want to bring up the two totals. You know how we talked about
yes.
You know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Uh-huh.
The two totals for tonight, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, two superstars, both had 16 points apiece. They got outperformed by Bruce Brown by 10 points. These are two guys that are supposed to be your cornerstones. I don't think Kevin Durant has hit the 20-point mark since game one.
You're right.
Kyrie Irving, yeah, he had a 6-point improvement in this one, but still, a near double-double, 16 points, 9 rebounds. Kevin Durant had a near triple double, 16 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. But still, these are two players that should be that should have the power to take over any specific game that they're in. And they got outperformed by Bruce Brown for a second straight game.
Yeah, that is hard to believe.
I mean, Lou, it just it seems like there is something seriously wrong with this Brooklyn Nets team. I don't know.
Yeah.
If, you know, maybe it is the coach, for all we know. Or maybe it's the fact that they're playing against – here's the thing I don't get. They're playing against a suffocating Celtics defense, but yet there's been games this season where Durant and Irving have had no problem scoring on this Celtics defense.
Right.
So I don't understand why they're having so much trouble now. As opposed to, by the way,
yeah.
Kyrie Irving went 0-7 from 3-point range tonight.
No win that way.
0-7. Durant only attempted 3 3-point shots, 2-3. Because most of the time he's being double teamed now by Boston. Some other point totals from the 109-103 final. Nick Claxton, 13 points off of the bench, 13.7 rebounds. Goran Dragic, for the first time this series, was held scoreless off of the bench. Patty Mills, 12 points off of the bench. And Blake Griffin, in his first return to action in... I forget how long, 8 points off of the bench, including 2 3-pointers. So, and Andre Drummond was just a complete waste of space in the starting lineup tonight.
Right.
2 points. 2 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist. It's like, what the fuck are you even doing out there?
That's what I would have said.
It's like he wasn't even rebounding. He was out rebounded by Bruce Brown and Kevin Durant. Matter of fact, I would actually expect that out of Nick Claxton, because Claxton is more of a power forward / center. So he was out rebounded by Nick Claxton as well. Hell, Kyrie Irving had the same amount of rebounds as he did. So I don't know what is up with this Brooklyn Nets team, but they are down 3-0, and I believe I believe in series where a team is up 3-0, that team has won out of 143 times, that team has won each and every one of those series whenever
yes.
they've been up 3-0.
No team has ever come back from 3-0 deficit in any series.
Now, looking at the Boston Celtics side of things, Jason Tatum, this was one of those nights where Tatum goes off. 39 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 6 steals as well on 13 of 29 shooting, including 10 trips to the free throw line. He shot 90% from the free throw line, missing only once. Jaylen Brown, 23 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. Marcus Smart, 14 points, 6 assists, 3 rebounds. Peyton Pritchard off of the bench, 10 points. And Grant Williams, 7 points off the bench. Derek White, only 2 points. 2 points, but 6 rebounds. Robert Williams in his first game back, 15 and a half minutes. 2 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. And depending on what they decide to do, he may be in the starting lineup next for game 4. So that would mean Daniel Theis would be moved to the bench after he had 9 points tonight to go along with 6 rebounds and 2 assists, including a 3-pointer as well. So, regardless, Boston has Brooklyn on the brink, and you know, we brought the We brought this up in Sports Whispers earlier today, and I want to pose this question to you, Lou.
Sure.
What potentially happens to this Brooklyn Nets team if they get swept in four games? Do you think we see like maybe perhaps Durant or maybe Irving get moved in the off season? I mean,
I do.
It's pretty embarrassing if you have this group of players and they're not able to produce.
So much for the big three.
And not to mention you had Harden to start the year, and you traded him for Ben Simmons.
That was the beginning of the downfall.
I agree.
You know, that was the big threat right there. Because, you know, before this, we were in first place, and we were up by 12 games by Christmas, and then after that, all hell broke loose.
I mean, it didn't help either that, you know, you didn't have Kyrie for any of the home games this year. Until they lifted the vaccination mandate. But other than that, you didn't really have any home games with Kyrie Irving. And the only times that the big three ever really played together were on the road. And even then, you know, they weren't playing like a big three should play.
No, they weren't.
You know, it seemed like they never really had the chemistry like you've seen out of, like, say, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, or LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, or Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and Dennis Rodman. You know, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, and who would be the third? Who would be the third star from that Lakers dynasty? Oh, I can't even remember. But
yeah,
you know, the point being is that yeah, you can call it a big three, but they never played like a big three.
No.
I mean, yeah, last year they had those moments where everybody was like, this isn't even fair, having such an offensively gifted team, but yet they completely collapsed once they got to the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it kind of spoke measure. I mean, if we're going based off of any past, I think Kyrie has possibly quit. Because whenever his teams have gone down in the past, he's basically grown disinterested. Like when Boston went down,
I've noticed that.
When he was in Boston and Boston went down, I think it was 3-0 or 3-1 to the Milwaukee Bucks one year, he didn't even bother to suit up for that final game.
Mm.
He decided to instead go. He instead decided to go to the mall or something. I forget what it was, but you know, he didn't even bother showing up for that game. Period. And Kevin Durant, you know, he was so lackadaisical tonight. It kind of seemed like, I don't know if he's just frustrated at the defenses that Boston keeps throwing at him.
I think he could be.
But it just seemed like he kind of checked out, basically.
Yeah, that's what I would have said. Checked out.
Because he wasn't imposing his will like he should be. You know, that sort of led people to question, too, if he never joined the Oklahoma City Thunder, would he even – or not Oklahoma City, the Golden State Warriors. If he never joined the Golden State Warriors, would he even have an NBA title?
Hell no.
You know, would he be that type of player that would be able to lead a team to an NBA championship?
No.
I mean, he almost had one with Oklahoma City that one year. He almost had one. Then he goes to Golden State, ends up winning, I think, what was it, two NBA titles, I think?
Yes.
And now he comes to Brooklyn, and everybody's looking at Brooklyn and thinking, oh, man, this is, you know, they got Kyrie Irving coming in. They got Kevin Durant. You know, everybody's looking at Brooklyn as being this next big juggernaut in the East. And, okay, yeah, their first year of playing together fully, they were, you know, they were on they were close to the top of the East. But then they fall all the way down to the play-in tournament this year. I mean,
yeah.
It just I don't know if it's their coach. I don't know if it's Steve Nash and the fact that he doesn't really make adjustments, or if his players have just become disinterested.
I think they have become disinterested.
It could also be an age factor as well, though, too.
Mm.
With, you know, sort of like what the problem that the Lakers have. The fact that the Lakers, you know, they have so many players now that are, you know, that are older, that are getting up there in age.
Like me.
And it's sort of the same thing with Brooklyn, where, you know, Kyrie and Durant, they're basically in their prime, but everybody else that's surrounding them is, you know, in their mid to late 30s. You do have Bruce Brown, who's young, 25, 26. You know, it just seems like age may potentially be another big factor out there in Brooklyn. And that's why I would not be surprised at all if they completely blow everything up, essentially. If they end up losing, if they end up getting swept by Boston. Because the way that Boston has been playing this series, I mean, they're saying that they're playing at a historic rate right now. The way they've been able to shut down Kevin Durant like they have. And, you know, Kyrie went off in game one, but now games two and three, they've seemingly shut down Kyrie. And, I remember the excuse was put out there, well, you know, Kyrie, he's, what's it called? He's, acknowledging Ramadan, that holiday where you have to fast during that period of time where you can't eat for a certain amount of time. And I mean, he even ended up going into the locker room to grab a banana and some other things while the second quarter of game two was still going on. So a lot of people felt that, well, maybe Kyrie is, you know, feeling weak because he's currently going through Ramadan and everything. Tonight, you know, I don't think he even went to the locker room tonight except for halftime. So, I mean, okay, you know, people want to give that excuse for game two. What was the excuse tonight? I mean, I don't know, but it's – I think they're going to have to address something with that club this year, this off season.
Especially I would think so
if they,
too, yeah.
If they end up getting closed out in four or five games, they're going to have to address something because, I mean, honestly, I honestly feel like a fool right now for saying that that I was most afraid of facing Brooklyn because Paul Pierce even said this tonight. He said that we may have seen Jason Tatum bypassing Kevin Durant right before our very eyes as a star. And I was looking at that. I'm like, really? I mean,
yeah,
Jason
he's gonna flush.
Tatum, Jason Tatum. This may be more of our, this may have been more of a coming out season for Jason Tatum. But has Kevin Durant really taken a step back to where, he's playing at to where he actually regressed this season? By the way, Durant is 33, so Durant is actually older than Irving.
Well, it's not exactly old yet, even by NBA standards. I mean, he's still got some years.
By NBA standards, I mean, depending on the type of player you are. I mean, let me just put it to you this way. LeBron James now isn't the same LeBron James as he was at the age of 33.
Of course not.
And I mean, I'm looking at Durant's stat line this year. 29.9, bordering on 30 points per game, 7.4 rebounds, 6.4 assists. It's not like he's regressed at all. Stat wise, as a matter of fact, let me see if I can find his. Yeah, he actually. This is actually the best that he's shot point wise since the 2013-2014 Oklahoma City season, where he had 32 points per game. And this year he averaged 29.9 through 55 games. So, I mean, I honestly have no idea what is going on with him right now that has caused Durant gave an excuse to the media just now. He said that he's been thinking too much this entire postseason.
I see.
And that's why he is, that's why he's been lackluster. But at the same time, he's been thinking too much. That's the exact same excuse that you gave last game. That you're thinking too much.
And some of us are guilty of that.
So, Colin Cowherd put it this way. This is what KD wanted. To hoop with a friend and not have a heavy-handed coach. Wonder if it feels as good as he thought it would. And, it kind of makes sense. He spoke with Kyrie Irving at the All-Star game a couple years ago about this. About bringing their talents to Brooklyn. By the way, I find it kind of funny that 2 weeks ago Nets fans were really chanting "We want Boston." 2 weeks
right.
ago, at the end of the play-in.
Yeah, only
game.
By that.
At the end of the play-in game, they always they said that we want Boston, and
yeah,
you guys want to face a number two seed. You got. I mean, I guess I could kind of understand. I would probably rather want to face Boston than face Miami. But, I mean, my God, it's – I guess I never thought that we would see the Nets go down this low compared to what they were last year. I didn't think we would see that big of a drop. But now,
neither I.
The Boston Celtics have a chance to end the Brooklyn Nets season on Monday night on Brooklyn's own home court. And that also being that there's the potential that Robert Williams may actually play more minutes in Game 4 as well. And Ben Simmons, believe it or not, there is actually a stat at play here. If Simmons plays in Game 4 and the Nets lose, he will be the first player in NBA history that has played in back-to-back playoff eliminations in the last consecutive games that he has played. He will be the first player ever to do that, to be eliminated in back-to-back games that he has played. And, you know, it's entirely possible. I mean, yeah, there are some players who are still playing. I mean, who knows? This for all we know, this entire Nets team may have just checked out entirely. I mean, I believe they won the rebounding game today or tonight, or at least for the most part, most of the game they were winning on the boards. But I mean, Boston has just manhandled them, like physically. Boston has kept putting bodies on different players. Honestly, I don't think I have ever seen a team that has been stacked that has been this stacked talent wise get so rattled like they have been in this series. For a series that was supposed to be closer than it currently is right now. I mean, hell, Boston took the first two games of the series, and yet Vegas was giving Brooklyn the odds-on favorite tonight.
Yeah.
Brooklyn was favored by 3 points tonight. I'll tell you one thing.
Right.
Anybody who put money on the Celtics, made some dough tonight.
Yeah. Lucky you.
Yes. Oh, I wish I had put money on them. Trust me. I wish I had.
You didn't.
No, I didn't. Because usually if I go from previous Celtics history, usually when they're up two games to none, they usually lose game three and maybe even game four as well. But so, I mean, I am even shell shocked right now by this, that Boston is somehow up three games to none on this Brooklyn team. And now it's almost leading me to wonder that maybe Steve Nash does get the scapegoat treatment. Maybe he is the, maybe he, I mean, a lot of people believe that he was coaching for his job tonight. But we also have to keep in mind, too, this is the same Boston Celtics team that three of the last 4 years they have made the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right.
So, you know, there's definitely experience in this team. And you know what, Stephen A. Smith kind of just brought this up right now, going back to Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Why wait until playing on Monday? If you could play on Monday, why the hell couldn't you play tonight? So that kind of is leading people to believe that maybe this is just a publicity stunt by Simmons to make it look like he's trying.
Hey, you're a pussy.
To make it look like he's trying to come back when really he'll just be held out of game four possibly.
Mm.
It's just like Stephen A. Smith just said. Why hold off until Monday if you could have played tonight?
I think he's lost it.
I don't know. But going into boxing for a minute here, Tyson Fury. It looks like we have seen Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King, for perhaps the final time in his illustrious career. Or have we? Tyson Fury knocked out Dillian White with a right uppercut in the sixth round today. Successfully defending his WBC and the ring heavyweight, or they call it the lineal heavyweight title, to improve his record, to improve his undefeated record to 32-0-1, and they're considering this to be the biggest event to ever, the biggest boxing event post war to be held in the history of the United Kingdom.
Huh.
The biggest post-war boxing event, which was held at Wembley Stadium in London today, and it sounded like that Tyson Fury said that he was going to be a man of his word, and basically stick to it that he would retire following this fight, where. He completed his 23rd knockout in 33 fights. However, then in came Francis Ngannou, who is the UFC heavyweight champion. He is the UFC heavyweight champion, and he has been known to have recorded the hardest punch in not just MMA history, but history, period. From what it sounds like. So now, this sets up the possibility that we could have boxing's hardest puncher in Tyson Fury facing off against Francis Ngannou, MMA's hardest puncher. A lot of people felt that Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather was the biggest crossover fight.
Yes.
This one may be on par with that one. Because it's going
to
be two heavyweights. It's going to be two heavyweights that are going to be boxing. Francis Ngannou.
Right.
Who arguably is the hardest puncher in MMA history, against Tyson Fury, who some people say is the hardest puncher in boxing history.
I've heard that.
So this could be the next super fight that we're looking at here. Now, you know, normally I would say you know, mixed martial artists, they don't really have a chance going into the boxing world. But when you're somebody like Francis Ngannou who relies solely on punching power, and I mean he very rarely does he go to the ground at all in mixed martial arts.
Right.
He's primarily a stand up fighter. Could this potentially be an even matchup? I mean, granted, you have the Gypsy King who, you know, has been used to boxing all of his career. Yet you have Ngannou who has trained for basically 25-minute fights in the UFC, but it yet has never fought in professional boxing. Could this potentially have a different result, if at all, because of the punching power?
It might. It's a big factor.
I mean, just the fact that it was different with Conor McGregor. With Conor McGregor, he's been known as basically a volume puncher. He's been known as a volume puncher, and, you know, most of the time, yeah, he would knock out people, but, you know, it would be helped when he uses his whole body as opposed to just his hands. And Ngannou can actually legit knock out people cold with just his fist. So I think it would be very interesting if this does come to fruition, which from what it sounded like both fighters were interested. This could be Tyson Fury's next fight if this does happen officially and not, you know, an amateur fight or whatnot. If it does happen professionally, it could be perhaps his last big threat that he has to face. Because, I mean, he already beat Deontay Wilder twice, who many people consider to be one of the hardest punchers in boxing. Now he's going to face an MMA star who, I mean, let's face it, the Gypsy King's fights don't last long anyway. So, I mean, the window would be there if Ngannou were to somehow score a knockout, that window would be still around that time frame where, it wouldn't be out of character for the Gypsy King to potentially score a quick knockout. You know, this isn't like Floyd Mayweather, for example, who knocked out, he didn't really knock out Conor McGregor. It was more like Conor literally could not get up because of how exhausted his body was. He wasn't exactly knocked out. It was the fact that he literally couldn't lift his hands to where the ref ended up stopping it. This is a different situation. We could potentially see a battle of two heavyweight sluggers going at it here.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, Lou, what do you think about that? You know, could, obviously, with Ngannou focusing mainly on his punching power, despite him never having professionally boxed before, only having fought in MMA fights, do you think he could potentially stand a chance against the heavyweight champion of the world?
No, I think with the lack of experience with that, I think that's going to be the disadvantage that he has. You know, it was one thing when, you know, you had McGregor and Whitaker, you know, which was a decent fight, but still, you know, McGregor didn't have a chance. So I think it's going to have the same result here. If you don't have the experience and going against a, you know, a seasoned fighter, you don't got a prayer in hell.
Well, to be fair, McGregor also took Mayweather 10 rounds. And many would argue that McGregor was actually winning that fight before his body just completely gave out on him.
I kind of thought it was going to happen that way too.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it. If you're an MMA fighter, you're only trained to go 25 minutes. I mean, how much is it per round? Three minutes per round?
3 minutes.
Or is it
three minutes in pro, 2 minutes in amateur.
In amateur, okay. Okay, so, yeah, three-minute rounds. And basically McGregor went one more round or – close to one more round in terms of MMA fighting. He went 30 minutes as opposed to the regular 25 that he trains for. You know, obviously the body isn't used to going 30 minutes. And in Ngannou's case, I think he's only gone the distance maybe once or twice in his career because he's never had to. And most of the time, whenever those times that he did go the distance, he never really seemed gassed at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know if cardio will be much of a problem for Ngannou. I think, you know, obviously, you know, maybe perhaps he could reach the halfway point of the fight, like maybe anywhere from six, seven, and eight with no problems. I think, much like McGregor, I think if it hits, like, round 10, oh, what is this?
Mm.
Are you watching this, Lou?
What happened?
A fan just tried to charge the court.
It had to happen.
What the fuck is up with people in Minnesota?
Yeah, or in the sports world in general, you know, always trying to pull something.
That's
the fans charging. Okay. As the third idiot.
Yeah. And I have a feeling, yeah, it had to do with protests. But that is the third fan this postseason in a Minnesota game that has had to be removed.
I tell you, you Wolves people have got some weird fans.
And it has to do with the fact that, you know, I brought this up last week. Glenn Taylor, who is the owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, has something about him with killing chickens and whatnot, or something like
that. I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that. Ugh.
And it was all, you know, we've had these wackos. One woman tried to glue herself to the court with Elmer's glue, no joke. Another woman tried to chain herself. Another woman chained herself to the backboard. Not the literal backboard, but you know what I mean, the bottom of the hoop. And she did successfully. And now a woman just tried to charge out onto the court. They got up out of their seat, got past the coaches, immediately got tackled by security, though.
Good.
And now she literally just got dragged off of the court by four different security officials. Throw him in jail. Seriously, you know, this is starting to get ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
The fact that fans can go out and do this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, what are these people smoking?
I don't know.
They're obviously not sane people. They're really not.
You know, this is the same. This reminds me of what happened last year when a fan threw a bottle at Kyrie Irving.
A Boston fan
threw a bottle at Kyrie Irving, and you know, it's like this obviously is a different story because this was more of a protest sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is more of a protest sort of thing, but still, you do that shit off of the court. Do that shit away from the game. You
right.
want to protest? Go protest outside the Target Center or something. Don't do this shit during a game. You know, who knows? Obviously, you know, most of these fans are harmless. But who knows if there's ever a fan that maybe they snuck something into the game, like a knife or something, and tries to stab one of these players. I mean, seriously, you're gonna start to see fans. You know, this is only gonna impact the fans negatively. Like, you're gonna start to see teams now take preventative measures for the fans to protect the safety of the players. Because of the fact that fans do stupid shit like this.
They sure do.
Believe we just saw that happen live just now.
I can believe it. The fans, you know, they do all kinds of stupid antics, so why should this be any different?
The thing that gets me is this is the same exact team. All three of these incidents have happened in a Minnesota Timberwolves playoff game.
Yeah, these Wolves fans are ridiculous.
I mean, I just don't. I don't understand what the hell is going on here. By the way, an update on Kevin Durant. A lot of people said that he looked very worn out tonight. Like, he looked exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of leads credence to what I said about age. I mean, Durant, granted, 33, there's still plenty of years left for him to play, but could age be potentially playing a role?
I would think so, because it does play a role.
Or are we seeing Kevin Durant be exposed by this Boston Celtics defense that basically he's still the same Kevin Durant that he was with Oklahoma City?
No, he's not.
The thing that I'm trying to say is that this shows that he needed help in order to win a title instead of bringing a team to the championship himself and winning it himself. I mean, I just, it's, this is very uncharacteristic of Durant. And by the way, on a replay here, yeah, that was definitely a woman that, that guy. I'll tell you one thing. Security was definitely right on top of her. Almost like they knew she was going to, almost like they knew she was going to charge, because she came right from the second row. She came right from the second row. She climbed over everybody else in the first row to try and charge the court. I mean, literally on replay, this shit happened so fast. It's almost like a car goes right by you at fast speed, and you're like, "What the fuck was that?" That's literally what I saw here. By the way, somebody said, first impression after attending a Nets playoff game at Barclays. They have zero home court advantage. Their fans couldn't care less.
Right.
As a matter of fact, somebody actually said that, what's it called? Madison Square Garden would have had more reaction from their fans.
Oh, of course.
If the Knicks were in Brooklyn's shoes. You know, though, it kind of, when you think about it, you kind of have to feel for the vets who signed on in Brooklyn under promises that ended up not being kept. You know, people like LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake Griffin, Patty Mills,
mm-hmm.
Goran Dragic, you know, being promised that they would be title contenders, and yet they ended up becoming a team that just barely made the playoffs. And instead of being told that they would sign on to contribute if they had come on with minimum deals. I mean, Patty Mills already has a ring, so that doesn't matter. But you know,
right.
LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin though was injured the past two games. LaMarcus Aldridge has been completely healthy. He's been riding the bench the entire postseason so far, through three games. Didn't even see a single shred of playing time tonight. Goran Dragic was barely used, and the amount of time he was used, he played poorly. Patty Mills, probably out of each of those four names, Patty Mills has probably been the only consistent player on Brooklyn this year out of those four.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, he was the one person that I wanted the Celtics to pick up before Brooklyn ended up grabbing him.
Ugh.
Which, honestly, yeah, that, you know, that pissed me off, because I would have rather Boston had grabbed him. Look at this. Ja Morant, 4 points and 8 assists tonight for Memphis. No wonder Memphis is down by 11 right now.
Only 11, though. It's not, you know, it's not insurmountable. I can come back from that.
Yeah, I mean, you can come back from that, but Ja Morant, it isn't helping that Ja Morant is having
right.
a very uncharacteristic night for himself tonight.
Yes.
I mean, a very uncharacteristic night. Only 4 points. This is a dude who's basically taken over Grizzlies games.
Right.
And it's almost like he took a step back to his rookie year tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, we all have our off nights, though.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't help either that they're in foul trouble. Their entire starting lineup is in foul trouble. 4 fouls for Morant, 4 fouls for Brooks, 3 for Jackson, 3 for Tillman, 3 for Bane. Yeah, that honestly, it looks like if the track continues the way it is right now, it looks like Minnesota is going to be able to tie this one up.
Who would have thought?
I would assume that Philly probably closes things down between them and Toronto in Game 5, especially with Matisse Thybulle returning. However, like I said, you have to keep an eye on Joel Embiid with that thumb, because
yes,
who knows how long he's going to be able to go dealing with that pain.
I don't think he's going to make it through the season.
I'd be surprised.
He's gonna have something done before the season's over.
Yeah. Utah and Dallas, honestly, I don't even know where that series is going, because I thought once Doncic came back that Dallas would take off, but Utah has now tied that series up. And you know, you gotta think that this has to be the year that Utah finally shows something. Otherwise, they risk potentially blowing up that entire team.
I don't think so. I mean, Utah has been fighting for so long, and they've never won a title.
Yeah. But you know, there's number 4 on Bane. So that's even – Jesus, sucks. That's foul number 4 on Bane, offensive foul. Unbelievable.
Unbelievably bad.
Anyways, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. We have just about a minute left. Thank you, Lou, for joining me tonight. We will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Don't forget, Thursday night, join us for join Jim early, myself and the gang, as we will recap the Survivor episode for this Wednesday night. Obviously, it'll be Thursday night that we do the podcast like we do every Thursday night. Then obviously we will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. If you guys haven't done so yet, subscribe to the Missy AE podcast on either blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE or on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Amazon Music by searching Missy AE, and you'll get access to these podcasts and all of our Survivor, all of our Big Brother, any of our podcasts that we've done in the past. Everybody have a good rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night.